Welcome to the Inclusion First podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaseva, your honorary First Inclusion Project podcast host. Welcome back to another episode of the College Takeover All Things Inclusive Edition, where I'm having thoughtful conversations with some amazing college pals with the hopes of inspiring you all to engage in conversations and actions that will create a more inclusive world. Today, we're talking about environmental justice and racism with my guest, Ashley.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ashley Valentin Gonzalez. My pronouns are she, her, hers, ella. I am a first-generation college student, an environmentalist from Logan Heights, majoring in environmental studies and minoring in business administration and ethics studies at the University of San Diego. I'm also a McNair scholar, where I'm currently working on a research paper about environmental racism and community mobilization in Logan Heights. I hope to demonstrate how the resilience and need of a community through political mobilization will result in rebuilding the neighborhoods that were destroyed and disregarded by policymakers. I also serve in my local community as a Portside Steering Committee member for the Community Air Protection Program, the Community Advisory Council at the Centro Cultural de la Raza, an intern for the Barrio Logan Environmental Health Coalition, as well as a Youth En Route Youth Advisory Board member. Thank you so much for having me here and for this opportunity to share this important work.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of this conversation, because as everyone has heard, Ashley is quite the busy gal. So we are going to just jump right into this conversation. Environmental justice is a movement to address issues such as clean air, clean water, and healthy and stable climate that affect all people, especially low-income and minority communities. So what exactly is environmental racism, and have you experienced it in your communities?
What's very interesting is that many community members do not have the privilege to wake up and have clean air, as many of you may have. And a lot of times they do not know the definition of environmental racism or this term. They just know that they're living in an environment where it's very hard to breathe and it's very normal for them. So there's a research paper called Race, Class, and Environmental Justice by Cutter, where he defines environmental racism as the practice of implementing policies based on race and socioeconomic background that results in disadvantages to marginalized communities in relation to their emotional and physical well-being. And I really do want to emphasize the emotional and physical well-being, just because oftentimes the emotional aspect is not discussed when it comes to environmental racism.
Right, absolutely.
As for my personal experience, growing up in Logan Heights, which some of you may or may not know, is a low-income community in San Diego, I realized that many of my neighborhoods hated the ugly gray apartment that I lived in. It had chain fences on the front, had broken windows that allowed the gas from the nearby gasoline station to come inside the building. However, I normalized that. And I saw the beauty and the graffiti on the side of the apartments and enjoyed looking at the broken windows to see the lowriders. The earliest encounter I had about environmental racism was when I was a young girl and I would sneak inside this abandoned green field with the neighborhood's kids. And this abandoned green field would later become a circus and then a church, and then it got abandoned again. But it was located between these two locally owned stores, a panaderia and like a jewelry store. And back then, Chicano Park did not have a playground. So that
about that's so crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was currently just built. But back then, it was just like a place of dirt, some like broken bottles. And everyone told my mom that don't take your child there at midnight. So that abandoned field was the only green space that was nearby me. And it was my park. It was my sacred area. However, I think it's very disappointing that as a young girl, I was risking my own health to go to this abandoned green field. As for the most recent experience I had was when the port side of San Diego had a Navy ship explode and all the chemicals and ash went to the air. And I just remember my parents struggling to breathe. My dad and I had to lay down in the bed for a couple days because we just had a headache and we did not want to work or do anything. And I just wanted to give two personal stories because this is the reality for our community members. And it's very heartbreaking how I see many of my friends struggling to breathe or have asthma due to the policies and constructions that were built in our homes.
And I'm really glad that you touched on the emotional toll that this takes and also the health hazards that this takes, because a study from UC San Diego showed that California's environmental regulations have systemically protected the state's white residents over people of color. Residents from Barrio Logan suffer asthma rates almost 7 times as much as their white counterparts 15 miles away in La Jolla. 70% of the residents in Barrio Logan are Hispanic and 40% live below the poverty line. Was this something that was surprising for you?
No, this actually isn't surprising at all. I remember when I was in high school and someone told me that I need to give them my zip code. And I said, why? And they said, I can tell you how long you can live just based on your zip code. And it was I agree. There's like a website you can Google. I think you put zip code and like life dependency or something along those lines. And it would tell you the average between your community, your county, state, and the United States. And I was very shocked as a freshman in high school. And it makes sense now that I'm in college, because if you lack green spaces, if you have food deserts, and if you have lack of like anything, it will impact your physical, emotional, and mental health. And that's the case we see right now in Barrio Logan.
And you previously mentioned this earlier with the incident of the Navy ship catching on fire, but it is really important that people listening know, if you're not from San Diego or just not particularly familiar with Barrio Logan, that Barrio Logan is close to the port of San Diego, which is a hub for ships, cargo, and heavy ships, not to mention the amount of gasoline where you can go and get gas for your car. There's a lot of gas stations, which means that the air is being heavily, you know, influenced and polluted. So like what are the things that can be done to improve air quality?
Well, as much as it's important to advocate for air quality at the federal level, it's also important to get involved in your local community. Specifically at Barrio Logan, there is a PAIR program where they are giving air monitors and air purifiers to portside residents. And I believe this was created after the ship explosion. It was implemented a year later. So it's a little late, but there's still some changes happening right now. I also just got these very exciting news from Environmental Health Coalition, where we're informed that the California Air Resources Board, also known as CARB, at the state level, prioritized way more money into public transportation statewide. And due to many individuals voicing their needs of having more public transportation, which will lessen the number of cars in the freeways. There's other ways to get involved, such as I'm focusing specifically in Barrio Logan, just because that's the knowledge I have, where we're advocating to have a community land trust to fight against gentrification. And the reason why gentrification is such a big problem, specifically in Logan Heights, is that community members and elders that have been advocating for more green spaces and clear air are being displaced from their homes. And so therefore, we are planning to have a community land trust, and that will allow people that have been advocating for decades to enjoy the changes in their communities without worrying about creating another movement in the communities that they're being placed in.
Wow, I'm glad to hear that incredible news, and I'm glad that California is doing something to make life, the quality of life, better for people. Are there specific, you know, reasons as to why low-income communities and minorities groups live closer to environmental hazards?
Well, I recommend looking into Robert Bullard. I always mispronounce it. But he did amazing work about environmental racism, specifically in the academic field. I can simplify some of his work, but a lot of the reasons why low-income and minorities of color live closer to environmental hazards can be traced way back to colonization. Even during the era of suburbanization, the Black community was often isolated in inner-city areas and had fewer economic opportunities to leave their environment compared to their white peers, who often had cars to flee the environment and the money to do so. And many of the issues such as redlining, food deserts, housing, education, employment, land use, environmental regulations, implementations of freeways, and even where the industrializations are being placed are interconnected when it comes to environmental racism and environmental hazards. So for instance, when the Coronado Bridge and Interstate 5 was being built and the port side of San Diego, junkyards, and et cetera, were implementing Barrio Logan, it all came down to institutional discrimination. So we all know that La Jolla, Del Mar, or other wealthy counties would not want a bridge or a junkyard near residential homes.
Right.
They would have the time. They have the resources, they have the wealth and political connections to defend themselves and their communities. But I want to clarify that I'm not stating that Barrio Logan community does not know how to defend themselves, because we all know they do, and we have the community Chicano Park takeover to demonstrate. And as a result, we have the Chicano Park, which Chicano Park is the legacy of our community history of preservation, self-determination, healing, and libertation. Anyways, however, I'm stating that communities that are similar to mine often do not have the education to know the risk it will have in our health. And if we do, it comes down to who has more political connections, who has more money to hire lawyers or professionals that will contribute their time, knowledge, resources, and money to not have these infrastructures or developments at our homes. So to simplify, low-income and minorities of color have less social and political power compared to their wealthy and often white peers.
It is true, and I loved how you said that, because the residents of Barrio Logan are very strong and resilient people, but it is important to be realistic about what a lack of resources can do, you know, to the community. But what are some steps that we as like non-residents of the community or are just trying to get more involved in environmental justice issues, what are the things that we can do to improve these issues and help out?
Well, there are many ways to get involved. I would say the first step is to educate yourself. Talk to educators or local community members or elders that contributed to the environmental justice movement. I personally like going to the library and read some books. Go to YouTube if you don't have a library nearby, or search up videos. Listen to podcasts such as this one. Are my personal favorites, attending local events that talk about their personal experiences and knowledge. There may be some local nonprofit organizations that are doing the work in your community, specifically issues that they are facing. So that would be one first step to volunteer as well. I would want to clarify that you do not have to be an intern for like this big organization. You can do little things as simple as signing and sharing a petition to your loved ones, attending town halls, and giving your input of how you want stronger air quality goals or have more funds invested into communities that are deeply impacted by environmental racism, or advocating for more public transportation. Just a little plug. Maybe you have these discussions with loved ones or take care of a community garden. And a lot of times you may be already contributing, such as reusing plastic bags, thrifting, planting flowers in your balcony. But I'm also a strong believer in investing in community organizations that are run by community members I always mix those up. But because they're often living the effects of environmental racism now, and they have so much knowledge that can contribute to finding solutions of bettering our community. I also want to emphasize that we must hold companies accountable for their contribution to climate change and poor air quality, because oftentimes they're doing more harm than the public.
Yeah, that is an important thing to note. Make sure you're doing your research on, you know, certain brands and these companies. And yes, we know sometimes we cannot avoid buying from them, but we need to be doing our part in sending whatever emails we can, calling whoever we can, and just spreading the word and advocating for better policies within these companies. So why should people who are not directly affected by this care about this issue?
Other than that, you must care about other people.
Right. That's the basic principle.
We cannot escape climate change. No matter how many resources or money you may have, sooner or later, it will impact your mental, physical, well-being, business, environment, and overall your life. Climate change does not only impact people's lives, it would also affect the housing market, which we all know is very competitive, especially in California. If you also have a business or infrastructure are not built for the harsh conditions that climate change will bring, so you may have to rebuild new infrastructures or change your business ways, which will make you lose profit. Maybe if you're a parent or want to be a parental figure in the future, do you really want your child to live in an environment where they cannot breathe, do not have access to clean water, or struggle to live in extreme events of natural disasters? This is not an issue for the future. We are seeing the negative consequences of climate change right now. More climate refugees are fleeing from their homes and migrating to other countries. Additionally, doctors are prescribing climate action for better health, which clearly demonstrates that there is a physical health risk. And there's so much more examples of the reality of climate change, but those are a few, which will hopefully allow you to advocate for environmental justice.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the conversation and sharing the knowledge that you had to share. And for any locals who are listening to this, or any people who end up coming to San Diego, please make sure you're respectful when you go to Barrio Logan, Chicano Park. There's very beautiful murals there, and make sure to support the local businesses that are there and be respectful to the people and the communities, because gentrification is something that is proving to be quite an issue. Just a little bit of context, Ashley and I, we grew up together and went to the same school that was in the surrounding local area, and just seeing some of the ways that it's changed, it's a little bit it's a little bit scary and sad to see sometimes. So please, just a reminder to be respectful of other people's cultures and to be kind to others and to take care of things and spaces that do not belong to you. So if you're hearing this message right now, it means that you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, I would like to thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as we did. Until then, keep conversing, keep engaging, and never stop learning.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to the inclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.